The world of business and finance so often deals in intangible assets, but today we'll offer something more concrete. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Let me start by saying the following merger worked out in Europe today will be worth the euro equivalent of $44 billion, and it creates the world's largest company in its line of work. That line is concrete, cement, crushed rock, the bedrock of civilization, if you think about it. Simon Tulett is a reporter for the BBC in London. Good morning.
Morning, David.
You probably always feared your career would someday bring you an assignment as boring as watching cement dry, but the scale of this merger is really quite striking.
That's right, yes. Everything you wanted to know, or perhaps didn't want to know, about the world of cement. That said, it would be to create the world's biggest cement company. Now, this deal involves a Swiss firm called Holcim and a French cement company called Lafarge, which would create an entity worth about $44 billion.
All right. And we're seeing reports that this is quite a tough negotiation. Two powerful big companies with CEOs that somehow have to work together. They're going to patch things up, you think?
The deal originally was tabled about a year ago, but there have been fraught negotiations over recent days to try and stop it from collapsing. The Holcim were particularly worried about the boss of Lafarge, a chap called Bruno Lafont, becoming the man in charge of the new company. They were particularly worried about his financial ability, essentially, and they also raised concerns about what they said were a brash management style. But they seem to have implicated there as well, because Bruno Lafont is going to be co-chair, and he's going to share that role with Holcim's current chairman, Wolfgang Reitzel.
All right, so the world's biggest cement merger soon to be set in stone. Simon Tulett, BBC in London, thank you.
Thank you, David.
First Lady Michelle Obama continues her trip in Asia today, where she's promoting a new initiative with the Peace Corps to help close the education gap for girls. Around the world, an estimated 62 million girls between the ages of 6 and 15 are not in school. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
The barriers that keep girls out of school range from cost and distance to social norms that require girls to spend hours fetching water or doing chores at home. The Let Girls Learn initiative aims to recruit at least 650 new Peace Corps volunteers to help break down those barriers in developing countries. Luis Benveniste with the World Bank says even small investments can make a big difference.
Something as simple as building separate toilet blocks for boys and girls in schools can have an important effect in fostering girls' participation.
The global charity CARE will help train Peace Corps volunteers. CARE's Sarah Lynch says those volunteers become part of their communities and can work closely with local leaders. The payoff, she says, can be significant.
Investments in girls' education have proven to go further than any other spending in global development.
Lynch says one extra year of secondary school can add 15 to 25% to girls' eventual wages, and their success could ultimately lift a whole economy. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Not sure anyone from overseas comes to see America's passenger train system for inspiration, but it turns out our freight rail system is the envy of the world, attracting delegations here to see how it ticks. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
Europeans have noticed the success of freight rail in the U.S. So have Russians, Brazilians, and Australians. They've all sent representatives here.
There have been dozens of delegations just over the last couple of years.
Patricia Riley is a senior vice president at the Association of American Railroads, a trade group for freight rail companies. Riley has met with some of the international visitors. They want to know everything, down to what stone is used for rail beds. Some come with interpreters. But Riley says they speak a common tongue.
They might not speak our language, but they love railroads. They love the sound of a whistle.
Garrick Francis grins ear to ear at the sound of this whistle. He's a lobbyist with the freight rail company CSX Transportation. He's standing with me on a plaza in downtown Washington overlooking a train tunnel. He's met with the international delegations, too. He says they're curious about a huge difference between the U.S. and the rest of the world. The American freight rail system is run entirely by private companies. Francis says he gets lots of questions about investment.
So how do we have private investors? Well, how is this a business that attracts, you know, investment from, you know, major funds or major shareholders on Wall Street and other places?
But Francis gets harder questions, too, about rail congestion in places like Chicago. Freight trains have to share track with passenger trains, adding to the congestion. And even though freight rail's safety record has improved dramatically, accidents still happen. Pasi Lal Tala heads the rail transportation program at Michigan Technological University.
Some of these late accidents with the crude oil trains have been drastic reminders that there's still a long way to go.
Lal Tala says in some ways, freight rail in the U.S. is a victim of its own success, making money and growing enough to attract admirers from around the world, but still facing expensive challenges. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
And the New York Times has a piece about pastrami prices skyrocketing. At a time of generally low inflation, the raw material for pastrami, beef brisket, is up 14% this year, 47% from 2013. It's drought where the cattle come from. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers, our online digital producer Tobin Lowe. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.